EPA, both NIH and ARC from HHS, NARA, NASA, USA and last my former employer, NSF. Susan already mentioned to you that we have a number of program components. We call them by two different names for some reason. A couple of them are called interagency working groups, and you see them listed, and then coordination groups, and finally we have what we call the community practice master, which is the specific sponsor of this activity today, although the social, economic, and workforce implications of EPA has also had its hand in supporting the activities over the years. We currently are creating a strategic plan for the coordinated strategic plans of the agencies around a cutely named thing called WeCompute, which shows the increasing synergy, will show the increasing synergy between humans and machines, trust and confidence, everybody's number comes out these days, and of course education for the better society is now also something that just about all of us have to pay some attention to. That's a little more detail on the cybersecurity strategic initiative that we're working on. I won't talk about that today. I'll just say also that we're being asked by Congress and the administration to do more in this activity as larger and larger activities are considered that need the cooperation and coordination of the research activities of the various subjects involved in IT research. And one of the interesting new areas that's just coming up to speed is the Digital Data Interagency Working Group. With harnessing the power of digital data report, which could be found on the NIDA work front page. I guess we can pursue that a little further. NIDA is a sort of a funny name. Maybe it should be Information Science and Technology Research and Directorate. Or maybe we should follow the Europeans and talk about informatics as an overarching word for this. Whatever we call it, of course, this activity is of great importance to science, more broadly, and society very broadly. And so the enhanced NIT research and development is crucial for many, many activities. And innovation, such as we're here to talk today, has always been at the core of IT, which, after all, is a relatively new thing in the scope of human events. Let me conclude by just making a couple observations that I would say are a result of 50 years of personally observing the IT work environment and doing a little additional research into the history prior to that. I think I started reading about innovation, at least in the 80s, when I was also a practicing computer scientist at a university. And I read a book called, by Gerhard Mensch called Stalemate in Technology, which talked about long-range cycles and how innovation can prosper for a while, and then society seems to set it aside, and then it comes back again, and so forth. That's an older book, but still a pretty interesting one. Clayton Christensen in the 90s, I'm sure many of you read The Innovator's Dilemma, with many interesting comments about the innovation activity and disruptive technologies in particular. And, of course, IT has produced many disruptive technologies over the years. I certainly commend that book, which is still very timely to you. Most recently, I finished an interesting book by Kling and Schultz after reading a recommendation from David Brooks in the New York Times about it called From Poverty to Prosperity. Takes another cut at the issues surrounding innovation and points out that our society very much has become a software society rather than a hardware society, and therefore we can switch our economical focuses from issues of scarcity, which are always associated with hardware, to issues of plenty, which can be associated with the different characteristics of software and other information-based activities. I recommend that book to you as well. Finally, let me say a word of thanks to my big boss, Uncle Sam. If you look back over the history of information technology, Uncle Sam has played a surprisingly innovative role in the major changes that have brought us to the information society that we have today. Let me just mention a couple. 1840, no private sector activity was willing to risk the money to test the telegraph to see if it would really work. The U.S. Congress created an appropriation act to give Samuel F. D. Morris enough money to string a telephone line from Baltimore to Washington, and where he sent the famous message, "What hath God wrought," proving that the telegraph worked. Very quickly, then, the private sector changed from the attitude of, "Why does Washington care what Baltimore has to say?" to say, "There may be some useful applications to this thing," and the telegraph industry, of course, took off big time. Data processing industry, I might say, began perhaps in the 1890 time frame because of the needs of the U.S. Department of Census. And one of the census engineers, a guy named Herman Hollerith, created what became the IBM Corporation, creating punch cards which greatly improved the facility of the census activities and, within the next half century, greatly improved the administrative processing of most other larger scale businesses in the United States and then around the world. Of course, the digital computer itself received huge support in the 1940s by supporting the ENIAC project, which was originally designed for ballistics tables computation, but then immediately fell to work for the Atomic Energy Commission in doing the various computations regarding atomic energy. The Department of Energy to this day is the world's leader in high-end computing. The ENIAC was high-end computing at one point in time. Now we're moving from petascale to exascale, and high-end computing has gotten a different meaning. But the U.S. government, through DOE and others, remains at the very forefront of those high-end developments. Another minor program member, DARPA, as we say, as they changed their name over the years, began creating in 1965 an innovative little project known as the ARPANET. And they put 20 years of sustained research into this project. How often are we able to muster the strength to put 20 years into anything? Of course, the public thinks the Internet was born instantly in 1995, but that was after 20 years of support from DARPA, and after 10 years of support from NSF, who in effect took the DARPA invention and did the innovation that made the ARPANET into the NSFNet, which was an infrastructure for higher education, which caused entrepreneurs to look in and say, "Whoa, there's money to be made here, step aside, folks." The web itself the World Wide Web basically was created at CERN, a research activity in Europe, as you probably know. And then 3 years after the basic creation of the web browser, which really unleashed the web as something for the public, was created at the NSF Center for Supercomputing Applications with the University of Illinois. Finally, Google called it from a research project at Stanford University, also supported by the National Science Foundation. So you can look at DOE and DARPA and NSF and stretching all the way, and Census, and stretching all the way back to Congress supporting the telegraph as an extremely proud history of creating the major steps, many of the major steps along the way toward the information society. Uncle Sam, here's to you. It's not only, of course, Uncle Sam. Uncle Sam has provided, in many cases, the framework to make these things work. But people are the most important product, and entrepreneurs from Samuel F. D. Morris forward are the individuals who have maneuvered within the complex environment that we have and to keep this innovation scheme going. I'm myself looking very forward to the various talks we have today on innovation as we proceed with the next phase of the information revolution and society's advance. I'll turn it back to you. Thanks again for being here.